It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/AcrossAmerica.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Welcome to Nerdist Podcast number 574.
Yes.
You know, I like that every time we do these intros and you're here, you always seem surprised that I want you to say anything.
I just like to casually slide in. I don't want to be presumptuous.
There was nothing casual about that slide in. It was a very labored, awful slide in. It wasn't slick.
That's my version of smoothness.
Oh, okay.
It's like steampunk smoothness. There's a lot of gears and it doesn't move. It's all rickety.
Listen, some people's demeanor is chunky peanut butter. That's okay, Kyle.
It's all right. Then you put that in a Reese's and it's delicious.
This podcast is David Arquette, who, I'd been acquaintance with David over the years. We'd seen each other at various events, never really talked, and instantly became friends.
He's a real nice guy.
We've been talking and texting like teenagers, and he's a good guy. And he's promoting his show Cleaners, which is on Crackle.com, and then also the independent film Field of Shoes, which is out on September 26th. So here we go. Nerdist Podcast number 574 with my new pal, David Arquette.
Yes.
Chunky peanut butter.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Bless you.
Thanks.
Or science.
Well, science. What would a wizard do?
What would a wizard do?
Yeah.
A wizard would cast a spell to never sneeze again. Or he would have magical sneezes. Or wish-granting sneezes. Like, every time you caught a wizard sneezing, you're like, I get to make a wish. And he's like, God damn it.
This is longer than I thought it was going to be.
See, this is why you shouldn't ask me questions. I'll teach you.
Yeah, good point.
David Arquette, welcome to this podcast has already started. I am enjoying your Run DMC shirt.
Thank you.
Oh, wait, it's not just Run DMC. That's those Beastie Boys.
That's that from that tour, that first big Beastie Boys tour.
Oh, my God. I remember that. Remember when they were just a party band?
Yeah, yeah.
The good old days.
Well, not really a party band. Like
They were like sexist and telling kids to do drugs and stuff like that. That's the days I miss.
I'm still holding on to those days. I'm still.
I really am.
I'm sorry. I've been giving up on the dream. Yeah.
Well, you look good, and that's the important thing.
Thank you.
You're surviving it, whatever it is. You're doing an okay job.
Yeah. A lot of energy
to see my innards.
It's best not to think about it.
Yeah. I work on the shell. What's on in the inside?
No. It sort of reminds me of one time. My mom's house is a place where you could literally eat off the floor. Like, it's spotless.
Wow.
But I gave her something to put away, and she opened this closet, and there was just a pile of shit just a bunch of stuff. A bunch of stuff in the closet. And she just threw it in there on top, and my response was, oh, so that's where that goes.
Yeah.
And that's the same kind of thing. Like, as long as you don't see it, it's not messy.
I like that philosophy. I can live with that.
But how do you maintain this lifestyle when you have a ton of shit going on?
No, I mean, I'm somewhat responsible. I was only like 8 minutes late.
Yeah, that wasn't bad at all, actually. Yeah. That wasn't bad at all. But you're in a movie, and you're producing television, and you have a nightclub, and you just bought another one.
I did not buy another one. That's a rumor.
I thought you bought the Crazy Girls.
Crazy Girls I did not buy, no. TMZ has gotten it wrong twice, and they're usually pretty good.
You know, that's what we were talking about before, is that TMZ is like become an actual source for real news.
Yeah. You usually can bet on them, but not for this one.
God damn it.
No, it's just, I don't know what's going on. I've probably spent enough that I could have bought it.
Maybe someone said that sarcastically. Jeez, he probably owns this place.
Yeah, so like those 3,672 lap dances probably amounted to the money they quoted.
Do you want to leave right now and go buy Crazy Girls? Let's just go do it.
Hey, listen, I got free cards for any of those places. Where I could call up Gino or Stan and Skins. Skins and shit.
There's a guy named Skins?
No, there's Stan who owns Skin.
Oh, that's
Skin
another club.
Skin is quite a spot, yeah. It's a fun one.
I don't know the LA strip club scene at all. I don't know it at all. I know
the ironic strip club scene, which is Sam's Hofbrau and Jumbo's. That's the ironic strip club
scene. Well, and Fantasy Island.
Yes, I've heard of that.
That's still
more ironic than that. Yes, it used to be Kelbo's, like an old like tiki lounge. And
yeah,
now
I remember.
It's just in West LA. It's
like
the best, like it really... It couldn't be any like divier, but I love it.
Is it pirate themed strip club? Because that would be fucking amazing.
It still has the same Kelbo's bar, nice. So you can still see like the lacquered like tiki things.
Keep your arms to yourself.
I love it.
Pirate bouncers.
Yes, I mean they could do it. That's actually the one to buy. It wouldn't be Crazy Girls. It would be Fantasy.
The one strip club you can get scurvy from.
Yep.
I may have got it from Fantasy Island. Yeah, that's it. But I ate a lot of lemons.
Ye should watch Black Bertha pleasure herself with her own pig leg.
Oh, it is really fun, tragic, that joint. It's fun. It's good.
So what is it specifically that you're working on now? Because I know you have the movie.
I have a movie, The Field of Lost Shoes, coming out in like a week or so.
So
and
now
it's
you're just
a Civil War film.
You're just doing press for that, I would imagine.
That, and I have a show on Crackle called Cleaners.
Yeah.
So those are the two I'm promoting at the moment.
You've done 20 episodes of that, right?
Yeah. We did I'm not sure how many, 12 and then 6. That's 18.
Fuck, I should work for...
That's how fast my mind works mathematically. That is it. You should see me trying to do math homework with my fifth grade daughter. Oh my gosh. It's so hard now. I don't know. I'm not a nerdist in that regard. Like, I am like in all the others. Like I love everything nerdy, but I'm just not smart enough.
Damn it. Yeah, well, math is a very specific. Math is one of those things where you learn it, and then when your brain just doesn't need to employ algebra anymore, your brain just kicks it out the door.
Right.
There's no reason for you to solve for X in a daily basis. So it's not weird that you don't. That's not crazy. Like, are you smarter than a fifth grader bullshit? It's not fair because that's all the shit those kids are studying right now.
It's all
time responsibilities. They're Absolutely. Keeping those fucking kids alive.
Yeah.
That show's still on, right? Is that timely?
I think that's a timely ref.
I don't know if it's on still. How do you like being a dad?
It's the greatest. It really is. I have a 10-year-old daughter, Coco, and a newborn, he's 4 months now, Charlie West. They're just the best. It's so much fun. You guys have kids?
No.
Oh. It's something to really look forward to. You never sleep again, which is really, it's difficult.
That's the problem there, though. That's like
really
my
heavy.
Favorite thing in life.
Yes.
Sleep is my child.
Yes.
It brings me so much joy. And if you haven't tried it, you really should sleep. Yes. Oh, it brings you so much joy.
That's true.
It's really fun.
Now everyone says, like, it's the greatest thing in the world. Did you think it was going to be the greatest thing in the world? Or were you like, I don't know about this. And then the second you were a dad, you were like, oh, I get it now.
Yeah. I mean, once you see him smile, I mean, that's like all he's doing right now. He's pooping, eating, smiling, and laughing and crying and sleeping. So, yeah, I mean, it does change everything. And now Coco's like a little person. She's
completely like the coolest. She's got a great sense of humor and she's got a huge heart and she's just a great person. So
are you stressed though? Because
I'm so stressed.
In like 3 or 4 years, everything. It's gonna be like boys and dating, and it's like, ugh.
I mean, the whole thing's stressful.
I'm a guy, we're disgusting, I know what guys are like.
Yeah, but when, I mean, even before that comes up, you're just like, oh, I don't want anything to ever happen to him. You know what I mean? Yeah. You have to completely like just, there's got to be some good in the world. Just please protect her. You know what I mean? Protect him. You know, just let there be some beauty.
I don't want you to go out with that boy.
Dad, are you calling me from Fantasy Island right now?
I am, and I'm seeing what's happening.
I am here as research.
Well, I do have a really bad, like, parenting style. Like, I don't really hide anything, so I'm like, listen, if you don't want to get as tragic as this, don't do this. It's kind of what it comes down to, like, sometimes when it's a bad moment. It's like, I know.
But I think that's good though, because I think kids can sense, well, as kids start to get older, obviously, you can lie to them when they're young and be like, there's a Santa Claus or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But when they get older, I think kids can really sense honesty and authenticity. And I don't know, I don't think there's anything wrong with being like, hey, I don't, you know, I'm just a person and you're a person and oh, good luck, we'll figure it out together.
Yeah, well, this is a sad story, but it's an honest story. But yeah, I have a nightclub and sometimes we have to like work until 2 or 3. And then I went home and, you know, you're drinking until, you know, 1:45. And, you know, so I go home and I go to sleep and I have to get up and take my daughter to school. But the time period there in drinking and then being sober and then being able to drive, it wasn't there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I had to take her, so I had to call an Uber. And she's like, what are you doing, Dad? Oh. And I had to explain. I was like, listen, I worked at my club last night, and I never drink and drive, and you have to – which I know it's awkward, but we're going to have to ride with another person to school right now.
I call that responsible.
It's this responsible. Is your new dad. But, you know, that also falls into the line of, listen, honey, this is, you have your whole life ahead of you. You can make the choices you want. You know what I mean? I hope you make the right ones. Don't.
Now I'll leave you with Armin, your driver.
Yeah. I went with her. I didn't send her alone.
Don't leave any trash in the car. Daddy's trying to keep his customer rating.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Hey, Armin, is Fantasy Island still open? Skin probably would be. Let's loop back.
I don't know. I just get tired at night now. I can't even admit, like, the idea of just going out and just being out. And I just feel like, yeah, I don't know. I gotta go to bed.
I know. I have a club called Bootsy Bellows, and it's hard to go all the time. You know what I mean? Now I'm the old guy at the club. I mean, it's my club, and we have puppets there and marionettes. Crazy marionettes that dance and have sex with each other.
Really?
Sort of. I mean,
I want to go.
Yes, that's awesome. I want to go to that.
Yes.
Where is that club?
It's the horriblest thing, but it happened. It just spontaneously happened. But we have a little Michael Jackson, and we have a, you know, post-op Michael Jackson.
Right.
And little Jackson 5 Jackson. And then, so I'm doing the little Jackson 5 Jackson, and there's another guy doing the Michael Jackson. And then, so they start freaking with each other. And I was like, this is like Michael Jackson's ego's like sexual, like, this is Freudian fucking horror.
I like that there was a deep psychological dive and that it wasn't just a sick joke. It was just like, no, this represents, like, it's an art piece.
The music is going like boom, 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 and you can hear the people going, oh, no, why?
I mean, this is technically masturbatory. I'll be really honest about it. It's like reaching through a time portal. Which is really what we're doing all the time, every time we masturbate, is reaching through a time portal.
Yeah,
to our younger selves.
I think what you did is fine. I don't think anyone would be proud. Where is the club?
It's right across from Boa on Sunset.
Oh.
It's where the old Bar One was back in the day.
Oh, I went there.
You did?
Yeah.
Were there puppets?
No, there weren't puppets that night. My friend,
if it was a private party, then
Pantera runs the...
Absolutely.
She was running a night that I went.
Yes.
And
in the back room, there's not typically... She does the back room on Fridays.
I was in the back. I went into the back room, but it's... It's a fascinating study in human interaction. The club thing. I mean, yeah. I don't drink, so for me, I experience every bit of it. Like,
yeah.
From what I remember in the old days of drinking, you don't hear how loud and you don't really feel how crowded something can be. Yeah. But when you're very aware of everything, you're like, it's really loud. Yes. Oh, there's a lot of people here.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
but it was pretty jumping.
Yeah, I'd say it's been a successful club for like 3 years, so it's hard to do that in LA.
Yeah,
pretty wild, but it's a good time. I mean, people have a blast there.
What do you like about it?
I like playing with the puppets. That's like my favorite part.
Nightclub just to play with puppets?
Yeah. I know. My puppet the collection has increased tremendously.
The Bob Baker Nightclub.
Oh, I love Bob Baker.
Yeah, that's a good
Those guys and Bob Baker, he lent us some of his puppets at the beginning. It was good.
That's
good stuff.
That's really cool. Yeah. That place is still open, right?
It is still open. But
it keeps on having fundraisers.
I know. It needs them. I've always had this dream of getting some big investment guy who's got a huge heart to just move it. It just needs to be on the 3rd Street Promenade, Hollywood Boulevard, or the Grove. It just needs to be right around one of those, places where there's a lot of traffic and people feel safe, and then you need someone to take care of Bob, get his finances right. in order and just make it the Bob Baker Marionette Theater and just keep that dream alive. Because at one point in Los Angeles, there were 89 puppet theaters throughout the city.
Whoa.
Yeah, because they didn't have movies at the time, and it was just starting up. Movies were just starting. So you went to go see puppet shows, and there were adult ones, and there were kid ones, and so they had all these different ones. They had one They had one puppet theater where you'd watch a puppet show here, and then you'd swing your chair around and you'd watch one on the other side.
Oh wow!
And Elvira Street had a couple puppets. So
yeah.
And even when movies first started coming out, the MGM movies, I have these two amazing puppets that they didn't have television, so they didn't have advertisements. So they do these little puppet shows of Rhett Butler and Scarlett O'Hara, and they'd be in the same costumes. The same costume makers had made these little costumes for the puppets, and they'd frankly, darling, I don't give a damn, and they'd do that as a little puppet show.
At the puppet theaters.
Coming to theaters, yeah.
Oh, wow. So they would do trailers.
Little trucks, yeah.
Oh, shit.
They drive them around the different areas in town.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
Do you build any of the puppets yourself, or just to operate?
I've built one, a giant Michael Jackson, a weird one. I have a Michael Jackson thing, I guess. But
that's weird. I built a Macaulay Culkin.
Perfect. I have bubbles.
I have a Corey Feldman. I have literally Corey Feldman. He's in my car. He just waits for me.
And the other guy is Scott Land. He's the greatest. He was the head puppeteer on Team America. And he builds all his own puppets, and he was at our place for quite a while, and he's the best living puppeteer, in my opinion.
Now, how come you haven't produced a puppet thing yet, or have you?
I did. I've always used puppets in different things. I did something called Dirt Squirrel a long time ago that there was a little puppetness, and... I enjoy puppets. I don't know.
No, I used to have a puppet collection.
You did?
Yeah. But it got when I started moving around a bunch when I left my parents' place, they had it in boxes, and then their garage flooded, and it ruined all of them.
No. Yeah. Were they all hand puppets?
A couple of them were hand puppets. I had this nice, old man Muppet puppet style that I got off of Puppets on the Pier in San Francisco. Yes. And his hair was made out of white peacock feathers, and it was a gorgeous, gorgeous puppet. That, a couple dummies, one marionette, and then some other kind of weird hand, the spring and the squirrel one, kind of stuff. It's just and they all got just soaked and ruined and stuff like that.
Wow.
Yeah, I had one kind of survived. It was a Groucho Marx dummy that I ended up doing a comedy bit with my friend Demorge. where I was like talking about how my stand-up isn't as good as it should be because it's better in conversation. So I got a Groucho Marx dummy to help me. And I bring out the Groucho Marx dummy, but he's in blackface.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And then I go, oh God, what are you, like, what, who did this to you? He's like, what do you mean? You did this to
no!
me.
Yeah.
And then I go, why are you talking like this? You making me talk like this. I am not making you talk like
this. Is so
and then my friend Demore, she's black, like comes out, he's like, what the fuck is this? I go, no, it's not me, it's the puppet. He's like, you're stealing my act.
That's awesome.
Now see, if you were Jeff Dunham, you would do that unironically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's harder to. I've worked with puppets before, and I guess if you're not used to it, you just go, oh, it's just, you just hold up the puppets and you make them talk. No. It's more intense. Yeah. Like, you got to, like the really hardcore puppets, like they have
monitors.
Monitors and the puppet wranglers. And, because we worked, we made some stuff with the Henson Company, and it is. Like, your budget triples as soon as you work with puppets because it triples the amount of people that you have to have on set.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Maybe it's time to do a David Arquette look back and do like a puppet retrospective of scenes from the favorite movies that you've been in.
Oh, gosh. Oh, I think it's too much budget. Too much budget for this little bang.
I honestly think, like, if you could do a mini version of Scream with marionettes,
with puppets,
that
would
fucking
work.
Awesome.
Absolutely. I think that you're onto something there.
Yeah, I think so.
I think it's time. Did you grow up in Los Angeles?
I did, yeah, since I was 5.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so went to Fairfax High School in L.A. Laces, L-A-C-E-S before that. Laces is a L.A. sort of middle school thing.
Yeah.
How was Fairfax High?
Fairfax High was interesting. It was wild. We were graffiti artists and break dancers, and it was a fun time. It was cool.
That's funny. That's the one that's on Fairfax and Melrose.
Yeah,
right across from the Silent Movie Theater.
Yeah,
Cine Family.
It's so funny because it's like was that really big at that high school? Like the graffiti and breakdancing and stuff like that.
Yeah, at the time, yeah.
It's funny because only like in the past like 4 or 5 years has like that area of Fairfax, like Fairfax Village, has become like a hip hop kind of mecca because of like the Odd Future guys and stuff like that. Like it's just like all streetwear, skate clothes, like graffiti.
But I remember
shops.
Before that, because I went to college. You and I are, I think we're the same age. But when I was in college, Melrose was all DJ stuff.
Yeah.
So it was all like record shops and like that's when the rave scene was popular. So there was a lot of like there were a lot of you could buy really cool turntables and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
there's still a couple of them there, I think.
Yeah, it was like Aardvark's was there originally and Posers was there. It was like a big punk rock scene early, like one of the first things that it was.
Yeah, Headline Records. I think they're still... Are they still there, Kyle? Headline Records?
I think so.
Yeah.
Oh, Bleaker Bob's was there.
Yes. And Tang Records was also there.
Well, your gentrification is not complete until you get an American Apparel and an Urban Outfitters.
That's right.
Once that happens, you're like, well...
I heard they're kicking out all the dispensaries on there because they want to like high class it.
I don't know if that's it's like it's always got to be kind of trashy. It's got to be a bunch of stores you've never heard of and really don't feel like going into.
Right.
That's most of Melrose.
What I don't understand is how there's like so many that have like the half like ladies booty bottoms and then the really tight pants and they're just those out front or like the sparkly clothes, like certain clothes. And then I don't know who buys them.
It doesn't ever seem like anyone's in these places.
I used to live off Melrose for about a year, and I would walk to the Starbucks. Again, gentrification. I would walk to the Starbucks, and I'd be like, who buys these bedazzled boots?
I know.
That are in every fucking storefront.
Every store.
How can they stay?
They all seem like the same store. It's kind of like when you go to like a Latino neighborhood, and there's just like a bunch of stores, and they all seem to have the same
thing. Whoa. Kind of racist, Jonah.
Why?
The Latino stores?
I'm saying the same thing about fucking shitty Melrose stores as well.
Yeah, but fuck white people. I don't know. It's like
not
sure
they're
white. And all the stuff.
I think it's more like Armenian in that.
I
didn't want to go there, but.
Yeah.
I don't know why I went. I love Armenians. getting back to Uber.
Listen, can we start over?
Let's reset. We got way too racial. I think it was Groucho Marx that took us that road.
Yeah, it was
again,
me.
Jonah dragged it down.
It was me. Yeah.
Did they do the flea markets on Sundays when you were in high school? Have they been doing that the entire time?
No, they started that right sort of after, probably.
I like, you know, my like that. I enjoy the idea of going to a flea market, but flea marketing in Los Angeles is basically just there aren't really deals. They're just like furniture stores who set up in tents in parking lots
that
now.
That is true. Yeah. They're not. You're not going to find anything. It's like any thrift store in LA is going to be picked over by the time you get there, and all the stuff that's good is going to be taken to a vintage store, and then you pay three times the price.
That's true.
It is amazing when you go to a much older city and you see what their flea markets and antique stores have. It's like
if you're really looking for antiques and trying to get a deal, go to Wurtz Brothers.
Wurtz Brothers, yeah, in West LA.
And then you go upstairs and you ask for Ruben.
Okay.
Whoa.
And say, Ruben, what's the new, like, tell him the style you're looking for and what's in, and he'll take you around to the little pieces that are.
Wurtz Brothers, that's really walking distance to Fantasy Island.
Exactly.
You can go buy a chair and take it to Fantasy Island and get a lap dancer.
Exactly. Yeah.
This is David Arquette's Map of Los Angeles.
It's weird. It just goes back and forth between Wurtz Brothers and Fantasy Island.
It's a cheap Uber drive to anywhere you need to be.
I'm telling you, it kind of is. You go down to Sam Hoff. Off in a bra, stop at Langer's to get a, nice pastrami sandwich.
What is that? How much have you seen? I got here in 88, I think.
Yeah.
And, it goes without saying that there are dramatic changes in Los Angeles since that time. Like, so many areas of Los Angeles felt completely uninhabitable.
Yeah.
And now it's, it's all, everything's kind of cool. Like, people shit on Los Angeles wherever you go, like, but there's actually really cool parts of Los Angeles.
I love Los Angeles. I got into a couple arguments just yesterday about people like, I saw people shitting on Los Angeles, and I was just retaliating. I think they're wrong.
Yeah, no. My comeback's always, well, you have shitty friends then. Or you're the shitty friend. Like, if you don't like it here, it's because you don't have good, nice people around.
Yeah, exactly. Any city is like what you make of it. It's like, the thing I always hate hearing when I'm in a different city is it's like, I tried the whole LA thing. That place sucks, and like that's something that somebody says who like lived here for a year and then didn't become famous, and then they're like, I tried the LA thing. That place blows.
Right.
Well, like, I get people trying to bond with where they go. I've been there. I mean, that place sucks, right? And I go, no, it's like any city.
Yeah. People say, well, what about traffic? It's not the worst in the country. Like Houston's worse. Honolulu is worse.
New York
City's horrible.
Oh man, just kidding. I just can't take the sitting in between buildings in the back of a car. It just drives me nuts.
Exactly.
But I do not enjoy driving in New York. I would much rather be sitting in the back of a car. And it doesn't freak me out when you're in the back of a car and they're just zipping through lanes that don't exist. I'm like, well, they know what they're doing. they learned to drive here. It's probably fine. But in any other city, my fingers would be gripped into the material of the seat. For some reason, when I go to New York, I'm like, I don't know. This is their ecosystem. They got it down. It's totally. Not that crazy. When I used to drink heavily, I used to take cabs everywhere. This is like in a pre-Uber world. It's really not that long ago. But it's really expensive to take cabs around Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's why Uber blew up so big, because a lot of the cab companies, like a lot of cab drivers here, like they screw people over. There's actually been multiple lawsuits throughout the years of like cab drivers being shitty and not having good business practices.
I still like taking cabs once in a while, though. I mean, I'll go outside, and before I call an Uber, if I see a cab, I'll take a cab.
Really?
Just to like balance it out, because I feel bad for the cab drivers since Uber came around. I do.
That's kind of nice, though.
And then I know a few of them. Like, I drive into the same cabs.
I hate like a cab driver.
I'm obviously still drinking and driving.
Wait a minute, what? Yeah. I had no idea.
I hate the thing that happens with cab drivers where it's like you get out and they tell you how much it is and you're like, and you hand the card and then they go, oh, no cash? And then you go, no. And they go,
I know.
And they act like it's a whole to do. Yeah. They're taking a long time hoping that you go, oh, never mind. I forgot. I have cash for you.
Yeah.
That's like, well, that's what I
hate.
They
just want to pay the, they just want to pay the
exactly.
Vanity. Yeah, every time.
Motherfuckers.
But it is interesting, like watching Uber spring up is an interesting like watching innovation happen instantly, where the existing structure is like, wait, you can't do that. It's like, well, they innovated, you could innovate, but they innovated, and so they came up with the service that people wanted, so that should drive you to drive, that should make you want to
It's fine.
Take an Uber to your next million-dollar idea. But that should make people want to... That should inspire people to innovate more. Do you... how do you run your company? Do you... I mean, because you...
We have no innovation. That's pretty much our thing. It's like, we don't innovate.
But you make a lot of... You make television, though. You guys make a lot of television.
Yeah, we have a show coming out. Oh, well, they're doing Cougar Town, our final season, and... And we have a show called Celebrity
Name Game.
That's
Craig's show.
Yeah.
That's right.
Craig's
yeah.
the best.
Yeah, I love Craig. He asked me to do the show, and I'm out of town performing.
You're
otherwise,
also probably insanely busy all the time. No time for anything.
But I would do anything for Craig. I just, unfortunately, the dates didn't work. But I saw the sizzle reel for it, and the show looks great.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's just the game Celebrity, essentially, and we mixed it up. And, you know, it's like a companion to a Family Feud or whatever. But we have, like... Debmar Mercury and I'm blanking on like the biggest company in the world. That's my partner. Hold on.
CBS is a syndication company, right?
Hold on. It's Fremantle.
Fremantle.
Thing. Oh, God.
Yeah. They're fucking
yeah.
big.
Yeah, that's a.
I just
big
almost got fired, I think. No, but they're all so like, they just do it right. They know how to do it super classy and take care of everyone and like everything's. Like super scheduled and it's like, wow, you guys are really know what you're doing here. And then I'll roll in.
Yeah. Well, you get to be like the artist type.
I don't know. I just come up with ideas, man.
You handle the rest.
You must know what you're doing, though.
No, I know
things,
what I'm
things
doing.
Are going very. Things seem to be
I've been
going
doing
pretty
it
well.
For a long time, for like 27 years. So
isn't that crazy? Do you ever just think about that and go, wow, I actually do have a skill set?
Yeah.
Because most of the time in your life, I feel like I feel like, I don't know if I know what I'm doing, and then something will come up, and someone will go, how do I solve this? And I'll go, oh, just do this and this and this, and I'll go, did that, you know, it's almost like that moment where the Tin Man's like, totally. Oh, that's Osley's triangle, that's the sum of the, you know, and you're yeah, like, whoa, exactly. Hey, where did that come from?
Yeah, it's that 10,000 hour rule, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
You know, there's something to it. I mean, I'm not sure I'm that many hours yet, but somewhere along there.
Are you, do you ever get used to, just from... being in the family that you're in and being the relationships you've been in and being in the press the whole time, do you ever get used to that? Or is it still just because you've grown
I
up
think,
with it?
Yeah, I got used to it to a certain degree. You know, I don't know. I've always sort of like taken a different thing to it. I don't know why. Maybe it was just growing up like a graffiti writer and just, I don't know. I still get like, I guess I get starstruck to a certain extent, or like I get social anxiety at those parties. I don't always feel like I fit in completely with all of that. Yeah. But I guess I got used to it. I get used to it, but I like it more when people probably. I'd assume that you have a similar thing, just because your show. I mean, at Midnight specifically, it's just so sort of personal in a weird way. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's like people like you, even the social media that's happened, you have a more personal relationship. It's not the same that it used to be. We just don't hide ourselves completely and like, you know, put up these walls and you have a makeup artist that takes care of you and wardrobe. And then you go out and you do your premiere and then that's how they see you. And then you only speak to a certain couple people and they can't ask you those questions. And I don't play that game.
No, so. Now it's almost like we're a culture of embracing the flaws. Like this is what it is.
Yeah. That's cool. I like that part about it for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's, does your daughter kind of understand everything at this point? Have you ever had to have the talk of like, okay, sometimes there are weird photographers hanging around and don't stress out, you know, just keep walking.
Yeah, she's pretty cool about it all. She's growing up with it, so.
And are they pretty respectful to...
I have a really funny relationship with the paparazzi. I mean, there's one or two that'll just be dicks and like try to like get you going. But for the most part, they're like... You know, they're just my buddies. I see them all the time outside the club. Half the time they're like, don't even want to take my picture, which is like, cool, this or that. But yeah, it's a pretty fun like little situation. You know, I know a bunch of them by name now.
Oh, that's really weird.
What's up, Roger?
That's kind of nice. So, I mean, I would imagine as long as, you know, just like in any profession, there are ones who are cool, there are ones who are dicks, you know, but if you can find the cool ones and be nice back, then I feel like they're, you know, they'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. It's, I think it's, it's that sort of changed a little too. It was when it first started getting really heavy in LA with paparazzi. There was like this kind of gangster element to it as well, and they kind of were all about like getting in front of you, getting in your face, and stopping your car. And you're like, "What's up, bitch?" Oh, Jesus. And I'd be like, "Fuck you, punk!" Get out, like, and then that's the picture you see, like.
You know, it's like with your filter.
Yeah.
And that's on the cover of Us magazine. Yeah. David Arquette has meltdown outside club. Like, hey, you guy pushed me.
No. You know, I got a newborn baby and you're fucking super aggressive with me. You know what I mean? It's like, watch the kid. But I think it's chilled out a lot and, you know, and everyone's sort of getting the game too. And TMZ and all that other stuff that's happened in the meantime has changed the game a lot.
It's interesting to hear you say you have social anxiety because I have it a bit too in those situations. Like I always feel like I don't belong here. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what to say to anybody. It feels weird. Do you think everyone feels that way?
Not everyone.
No,
I don't. I mean, some people are just really great at that. You know what I mean? It's like Bill Clinton, for instance. My fiance, her uncle was his chief of staff for the first term, Mac McClarty, and he. She just tells me all these stories about Bill and all of his stuff, and he'll learn something about, you know, a person that he's meeting. He has people that help him, obviously, and he learns something. He has this game where he remembers their name, he remembers where they're from, he remembers their kid's name, he associates it with something in his life, so that when he'll see them like 3 years later, he'll say, "How's your daughter?" and blah, 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 and all this stuff. So someone like Bill is very good at it, so good that it made him the president. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, and he's a... You know, smart man.
I guess you wouldn't. I guess you probably. I don't know how much social anxiety you should have if you want to run the country.
Yeah. I don't know. No. Yeah, you can. I guess they'll knock that out of you. I think.
Ready to do the inauguration? I don't know. Oh. I feel weird. Do I have to see all those people?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're the president. You got to go out there. Just give me a minute.
Oh, that would be a really funny skit, though. The president who's just. Oh, I guess it was like the King's Speech. I guess that was.
Yeah.
It's a great movie, right?
Yeah, but in America.
Yeah.
Not over there, the goddamn British.
But there are some people that are just really good at it. It's like some people are really good at auditions. Like, I have implode inside in auditions.
I mean, I hate them too.
Gotten sometimes a little better, but there's this whole element of being judged and, like, people talking and, like, I don't know, it makes me sweat, and that's not good enough. Audition space.
No,
you're like all like sweaty. It's like, are you ready? Yeah, I'm ready. Sure. Yeah.
There's a weird, and I don't know where it originates, but there's this very strange party network in Los Angeles. And when I was in my early 20s, I was dating a girl who was part of that.
Yeah,
and it was this group of like all of her friends were like. Tobey Maguire and Leonardo DiCaprio and Jay Ferguson and all this like little knit group of like young actor kids. And every fucking night they knew about something that was going on somewhere. And this was kind of in a pre-internet era. Yeah. And I can't, it's like, where is this strange, where does this come from? Because I don't know, I don't even...
It's part of my business. I mean, right now, I mean, essentially what they're called now are promoters.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? But back then, they still sort of had them. They were sort of the party people. And they just, you know, essentially they know where all the new hot girls are.
Oh,
and they sort of have a link on them, and they make sure that they, like... You know, they take them out to dinner, and sometimes people will take them shopping and stuff like that, and they'll keep them sort of in this little core group of, you know, this little amoeba of party people that go to different places.
That's crazy.
That when you go to that place with this group, then you have the hottest girls in town at your party, and it's immediate party wherever.
Oh, interesting. Because I remember
it's easy when the Leo or Tommy are going back in the day. Yeah,
yeah. You just kind of stand near them, and you just sort of get hit. It's just like it's just like you're in the smaller fishing boat. Like, yeah, we better.
We better get next to the Bubba Gump Shrimp Company over there.
Get that wake.
But no, no, literally. I mean, this is a horrible thing to say, but I'm going to say it. Sure. I introduced Leo to like a bunch of his best friends, and I pretty much, I think they left me for I got dumped a little bit. I mean, they still show the old man respect, but they definitely are all better friends now than I am.
I remember in like 97, my girlfriend at the time, we went to a Thanksgiving dinner at Brent Boldhouse's place, which is just this really cool apartment above, sounds like above where the comedy store is. And he was really nice. And I think that's where I met Sarah for the first time. And he promoted a couple, you know, like a handful of nights around town. And now he's like fucking like giant office building. Like it's an industry.
Yeah,
now.
He certainly is. He's always been doing it. When I first ever went out, it was at his spots. And, you know, he'd always been really cool about, you know, working together and working with Jeffrey Best, another guy who does a lot of stuff like that.
What have you learned about human nature from running? Or is L.A. so unique in the sense of the type of people that it that swirl in this?
I don't know. Like, what's the quote about human nature?
What have you learned about people? Like, because if you run a nightclub, basically, you're seeing people sometimes at their best and sometimes at their worst, and you're seeing it's a nonstop. I mean, like, you're basically, it's a petri dish where you're just watching people interact nonstop. Do you feel like you have a better understanding of human beings?
I don't know. To a certain extent, there are stuff. I mean, I'm amazed at how sometimes people can be pretty bad and they still, you know, they still thrive or get along or like, geez, these are evil.
Yeah.
You know, like some people are fucking assholes and they're just still assholes, you know, 30 years later.
Well, yeah.
How do you keep fights from breaking out nightly in your club? I mean, you're talking about where dudes are in super alpha mode.
Yeah.
Their hormones are raging. They're drunk. And whatever else.
I've only had a couple people tossed out, and I don't like to do it. But when they get, like, aggressive and violent, like, you know, we have this one, like, big dragon, like a Chinese dragon.
Yeah.
And it's a puppet. So if somebody buys a certain amount of champagne, we'll come out with this giant, you know, dragon. And one night I kind of like grabbed it and shook it and my head's in there.
Oh, shit.
So I like just like pushed him toward a bodyguard. They bounced him. But a lot of the time I'm always like walking through the road like, I'm sorry. Oh, excuse me. Pardon me. You know, I'm like the Bugs Bunny in that cartoon.
Excuse me.
That's how I walk through the club. And that's sort of how I try to approach everything. I mean, it's hard to sometimes because people are aggressive and sometimes they really just want to fight you.
Yeah, no, I'm a big guy, so I learned quickly to, like, when I was going through, you know, a club or a crowded bar, to just, same thing. Sorry, excuse me. Like, I have to, like, because if I bump into somebody, it's a big bump.
Right.
Like, they, like, bounce back. And it's like, you know, there's been so many times in my life where, like, I just, you know, I'm trying to get by. I kind of get pushed. I bump into a guy, and he's ready to go for a fight.
Right.
And so it's like it's a good way. Like, I like to think that, like, I like the thing. So it's like that's how you try to live your life. Like, getting through a crowded bar, try not to, you know, mess with anybody so nobody messes with
you. He doesn't want to fight you. He wants to fight his own dad.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody wants to be respected, I think, you know, for the most part.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to... I think people want to feel significant in some way, and the way that people pursue significance, you know, they can pursue it in it can just be in like micro significance, like in like that's their bar, you know, like that's their territory, or it can be in a macro sense of like, oh, they want to, you know, build a bunch of things and be significant, you know, like they want to be Trump or whatever. But ultimately, I feel like a lot of the eternal struggle of life is the sort of the fight for significance. And maybe that's a biological, like, oh, my DNA has to live on, and so I must be significant so that I plant my seeds, you know? I don't know what it is, but it definitely... How do you feel like you... What's your struggle with significance?
I don't know. Like, my whole... I don't know. I have a lot of struggles with it.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, like growing up, I always, you know, we came from an abusive family. And that's one of the things that we've learned, like, my mother was abused, and she abused us as kids, and it was a traumatic way to grow up. But through the process, she did a lot of work on herself, and she eventually became a marriage family counselor, and she did all of this, you know, intern work where she worked with all these couples, and she got breast cancer, and she fought it for a long time. But on her deathbed, she got her certificate to be a marriage family counselor. Oh, wow. And I was like, Mom, this is like your certificate for life, because essentially she won. You know, you won. You can graduate now. You can not worry about it, because she, through the process, and even though we were abused, none of us are abusive to our kids. So mm-hmm. that's sort of like a thing. So my thing growing up was I always wanted to be the good kid. I wanted everything to be fine. Like, how can I help? I was like the, you know, mascot or whatever. I'm just trying to fix, like, you know, keep everything cool. Let's laugh about it. Yeah. Keep it light. Let's, oh. And so that, like, played into a lot of my self-worth and, like, you know, just, am I good enough? That kind of shit. Like, that's where my personal, like, significance sort of gauge is, and a lot of that still is work I'm doing on myself, you know what I mean? And a lot of that stuff has to do with confidence, and a lot of that stuff is how you walk into a room if you're trying to get a job, or, you know, how you complete your job on a day-to-day thing. So, you know, I do the best I can. I mean, you know,
that's an amazing story, though. Yeah. And also, just, I understand that idea of being sort of the peacekeeper. You know, where, I mean, I didn't have any type of abusive relationship with my parents, but when I was growing up, they fought a lot. And so I always felt like I was like hey, let's all just not, you know, and I still feel like I'm that way in certain situations where it's like, hey, we can figure this out by talking. We can talk this out. We can figure this out, you know, like it's all achievable if we can reason with each other.
Yeah.
But you can't reason with everybody, and you can't fix everyone.
No, you can't. You know what I mean? That's the truth too. And then it just becomes like shit happens, and you know what I mean? Yeah. And then it's like you gotta, like, also, you know, allow people to have their little journey with it all. You know?
Well, it's hard because it's, you know, like this is a theme lately that I've been experiencing in my life. So I apologize if I've been talking a lot about it on the podcast. This is for the listeners. Mm-hmm. But the idea of, you know, just in terms of significance or self-esteem, or I feel like you get into the most trouble when you attach your self-esteem to external things, because those things, you have no control over them. And so to place your self-esteem into things that you have no control over is a very dicey proposition.
Yeah.
You know? So how do you establish, like, hey, no matter what happens, I'm okay because I'm a competent, caring individual who, you know, and I just want to be cool with stuff and happy. So how do you pull that in when there's so much of the world is constantly, like, trying to smack you down?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of that stuff I look for, like, okay, so the universe is talking to me, obviously, about this. You know what I mean? And what the heck is it trying to – what is it saying to me? Like, okay, like, and then what do I have to work on, or what do I have to change, or what do I have to accept? And just, I don't know, just kind of – go with it. I mean, I like, my whole thing is I just want it all to be fun. Like, I know shit's gonna happen, and, like, I know there's, like, daily stuff you always have to deal with, and, like, just putting your world together, and, you know, whatever it is, making sure there's food in the refrigerator, whatever it is. But I don't know. At some point, I mean, this is a conversation I always have with my girl. I was like, listen, things happen in this world. Like, somebody gets sick, and then you have to deal with that, like, real life shit, you know? But until then, let's not make, like, that the size of, like, everything, you know what I mean? Like, let's just keep it all, like, let's deal with that. But you also have to be careful that it's not, like, every sort of thing that comes up is another, like, problem, an issue.
Disaster,
like, you have to, like, find the fun. You have to, like, stop and smell the roses. You have to, like, feel the wind, like, sometimes, and just, like, live in that for a second, or laugh. I mean, laughter is what's so great. And when you can, you guys do that all the time. So, I mean, you got that immediate sort of recharge going. Although there's also the dump after. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we know exactly.
There's the drive home.
Yeah. That was the funny story, actually. My first job ever was The Outsiders, which was like a Fox TV version of the S.E. Hinton novel. That was the great movie. And we did it, and it was like we did this one season, and then the season's coming out, and we go, and there's this thing that we go to a mall, and they filled the mall with all the people. We walk in, we're like the Beatles, you know what I mean? We're in Teen Beat and all this crap. And we go out, we see all these kids, we're taking all these pictures, and people are freaking out, and our ears are ringing, and we're crazy. And then we leave, and we get back into the limousine, and we're driving away. And then Robert Russler, amazing actor.
Oh, yeah, I know who he is.
Yeah, great guy, turns to me and says, "Now listen, you know, that was all that, but now you're just you again. And now we're just here again. And just, like, don't get used to this, like, you know, don't believe the hype all the time." And that was a huge fucking lesson for me, because I remember that to this day. I mean, and I remember that in doing a movie or a movie being successful or one not being successful, and just sort of keeping it all in perspective that, you know, it's all out of your control to a certain extent, and, you know, to just enjoy the ride somewhat and not...
That's really cool. That's really Robert Russler was the other douchebag in Weird Science. Like, he and Robert Downey Jr. Yeah. He was the other guy. Oh, I don't mean he was douchebag, but like his character, like he was the other villain basically in Weird Science.
That's awesome. Such a great thing to hear right in the beginning of you getting into stuff too.
Yeah. And then we were canceled the next week. And it really was.
Yeah.
And
what did I just say?
Oh, what a funny story though. We were canceled and okay, so we grew up in this big house in Hollywood, and we had extra rooms and stuff, and living at our house was Luke Perry for years, auditioning with friends of mine and Alexis, and he was living there, he was auditioning and all this stuff, and he got a gig, he got a 90210. So they cancel Outsiders while I'm living there, and I'm bummed, and I'm like, my show just got canceled. Oh, no. He's like, "Oh, my show got picked up," and he's fucking the biggest like thing since sliced bread, and 90210 goes through the roof, and he does the same mall appearance that we have, but there's a riot. and it makes it like, you know, he goes through the stratosphere. Really cool to see, but it was also like, oh, it really is like this, you get swatted around a lot in this business.
And they brought back the 90210 for bringing back the James Dean hair, which I tried so hard to do in the early 90s.
Yo, was just funny little story. You know how he had sideburns?
Yes.
He had sideburns because we were all the outsiders and we all had sideburns.
Oh, no!
Yes!
He made that a thing, but that was your thing.
Yeah, it was our thing!
Then how ironic that you were the outsider still.
Yeah, there you go.
But then you guys were both in the Buffy movie.
Yeah, and that was a nice little, thank you. It was a little, he helped me out. Like, it got me, just put in a good word and got me in there. And then I went and worked with Paul Rubens for the first time, who I'd become best friends with ever since.
I mean, I got to say, because I loved the Buffy series and I loved Joss. But I feel like when people say Buffy, a lot of times they just mean the series. But the original movie,
it's great.
It's so fucking great. Yeah. And it was one of those, like, I remember seeing the poster for it, and I was like, Luke Perry? Oh, come on. And then he's great in the movie. Yeah, like, so against Dylan type.
Yeah, totally. I know, it's this weird thing. Like, sometimes I think it's a big marketing thing. I think it's somehow, you know, there's some people that just know how to market it in the right way that It explains the tone right off. Because then if the tone's different, then if you think it... Because some people, I think, would have thought the movie was more going to be like The Show.
Right.
So they go to the movie thinking it's that, and then they're like, oh, it's too broad. You know what I mean? And then they do the show right, the way the audience sort of expected it, and maybe Joss expected it too. So then they do it that way. But then there's other things, and then, well, like a Ready to Rumble, like we did Ready to Rumble, and it's a wrestling movie, but, you know, and it's fun, and it's over the top, but it's not, you know, The Wrestler,
right?
You know what I mean? And a lot of wrestling fans, you take it super seriously, so it's like, they don't want you to make fun of it, but But then in retrospect, you can look back on it and say, oh, that's actually just a fun movie, and it's like a romp.
Yeah,
I don't know.
When you were working with WCW, were you ever worried that out in public the wrestling fans were going to just murder you?
I did get like this little kid threw a, like a big chunk of dirt in my eye.
Oh, Jesus.
No, I turned around. It was like a 10-year-old kid. And he's like, flip me the bird. I was like, dude, I just brought the belt out. You guys to like take pictures with. What are you doing? Yeah.
That's not a belt you want to get an ass whooping with.
Yeah. Surprise, Bam Bam Bigelow didn't take me down. Yeah. He was a good guy.
So you've done a lot of really fun stuff. It sounds like I think the idea of, you know, hey, let's make it fun. That's such a great, because then it's not so tied to a specific thing that you're doing. You're trying to apply that filter to everything.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And then that sort of makes everything manageable, and you know, but you can learn when you're having fun, and you know, like, sure. I don't know. I think it's really important to do that, because I always say life will have enough roadblocks that you don't want. So why? And I create them all the time, but I still say, like, why create them yourself?
Right.
Totally. Why do we create roadblocks?
Yeah. There's also this thing about just this business. If you're in this business, it's like there's some people that have been like just so fed up with it. I was like, listen, you can go back to Oklahoma. And, you know, go back home and do your thing, whatever you want. And you'll definitely never make it. You know what I mean? But if you stay here, you'll have an adventure. You'll work, especially if you're really driven and you want to just do interesting things and, like, you're not so worried about money, as you know, or you just, you know, even if you do atmosphere work, whatever it is, like, if you want to get involved and, like, be a part of different things, you can, and you will live all these little different lives. But if you go away there, you're just not going to live the entertainment life. You
right,
know what I mean?
Yeah. Right.
And then if you do that long enough, you know, then like a Mickey Rourke, something awesome happens. And like, you know, oh, then they get him again. And, you know, like Paul Rubens, he's coming out on a TV show soon. That's like a nice reoccurring. I was like, that's so dope that somebody got you to put you on like a drama comedy to, you know, allow you to, like, because he's one of the greats in my
amazing.
And then if it doesn't work out, you can go back to your home in Nebraska and be like, yeah, I tried the LA thing for a while.
Yeah, that place sucks. Traffic, smog, the people are the worst.
Yeah. By the way, I'm, you know, Paul Rubens is so fucking good. Like, he was so good in Blow.
Yeah.
So good.
Amazing.
I'm surprised he didn't, and I just assumed that maybe it was his own choice, that just didn't do a ton of other films.
Well, he doesn't really need to. He made a ton of money off of Pee-wee merchandise, right?
I don't think he needs to do anything.
He's very specific about his choices, and you know, he's one of the smartest people
he's
I've
awesome.
Ever met. I mean, you know, he was. I don't know if he's kind of instrumental in helping or discovering Tim Burton, and to a certain extent, you know, and you know, he did Big Adventure. And that alone, you know, having any sort of hand in Tim Burton, like, you know, his genius, like, being seen by the world is just such an accomplishment.
Yeah, and to have the smarts of saying, like, hey, I'm getting offered a movie. I'm going to have it. I'm going to have Phil Hartman help me write it.
I met with Paul and some of the guys from Soapbox, which is this production house, friends of mine. And we met with him just to talk about, like, hey, you know, is there anything we could all figure out together? And he's really sweet. You know him, but he's really sweet, very soft-spoken, like, really sweet guy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, everyone kind of freaked out and was trying to hide it when they first met him, which he must be so used to at this point.
Yeah.
But everyone's, you know, like, we're all around the same age, so we're just right. We're right in the sweet spot for Paul. And so, we, you know, everyone starts to calm down a little bit in the meeting. Everyone's starting to relax, and he was like, yeah, and so, like, when we were doing Big Adventure, and I was like, blah, blah, and he, like, launches into the Pee-wee voice, and everyone's like, like, I can see, I see all the eyes, I see all the fists clench, like, everyone's trying to sit in their seats but not embarrass themselves, but I'm watching all their reactions, too, because it's, like, it's so ingrained, like, he's so ingrained deeply in so many of us.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and it's kind of like, he was at the beginning of what a lot of sort of the Nerdist like philosophy, in a sense, like you really become students of this whole game. You know what I mean? And all the pop culture that's going on and all this stuff that's going on, all the creativity and all the different films and all the different stuff. But he was doing that with like, you know, what was the thing? We'd watch tons of them. Like MGM had some like Hooray for Hollywood, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. And it's an amazing box set. And it just like, you know, shows all of these, you know, different styles of film and musicals and all this stuff and all these show pieces and I'm blanking out, like the swimming ladies and Busby Burke, all this
that,
stuff
all that and, that's entertainment
yes,
kind of stuff. Yeah.
But it's all like this little stuff that you still see on Family Guy now, and you still, you know what I mean? And it's like, but he was a student of that really early on. And he had that sort of like love for all that stuff, and he's just such a genius. I learned so much from him, it's not why I have puppets at my theater. It's actually not. My grandfather was huge into puppets and left me puppets. My father left me puppets from my grandfather. So.
Oh wow.
You ready for this idea? Puppet strip club. I'm telling you.
By the way, okay. It's exactly what I wanted to do with Crazy Girls. I didn't want to buy a strip club. I wanted to turn it into a burlesque club. And, you know, part of it is during the day, there's a, you know, a puppet show that runs, you know, a few times a day. So yeah. You can, like, do something fun for people that are going around those buses. And then at night, there'll be girls involved, too. And then you know, because there were these adult themed puppet shows back in the day were fucking amazing. Dope.
Yeah. Did you? I just brought this up in our morning writers meeting today. I think we're going to show a clip of it on the show tonight. Maybe 15 years ago, I was at a video store in West LA, and there was in the bargain bin, like in the front section, not even in the adult section, the front section for 99 cents, was this puppet porn from the 70s called Let My Puppets Come. Did you ever see it?
No, I haven't.
It's fucking awesome.
Do you still have it?
No kidding.
I don't know where it is, but we found a clip of it. We showed a clip in the morning meeting. Unfortunately, it was on... It was like the clip they found was on like a flash porn site.
Yeah.
So of course everyone in the meeting were like, sorry about all the banner ads around. So you can sort of ignore that and just focus on the puppetry in the middle. It'd be great.
Very good.
It's just like, you know, it's like the last thing people want to see in the morning writers meeting is like puppets fucking and then a bunch of gaping porn.
Yeah.
Like
around.
But the but it's basically it's this kind of vaudeville it's like vaudeville comedy style.
Yeah.
But it's all puppets and they're in these like satirical porn scenes like fucking each other.
That is sort of taken from this thing that Sid and Murray Croft did for the World's Fair called I don't know how to speak French, but it's Dolls of Paris is the translation. Poupées de Paris or something like that. And on the soundtrack, they had Elvis Presley, Frank Sinatra, Liberace. It was one of the most expensive soundtracks ever made. It was made for a puppet show, and it was made for the World's Fair. That's another thing. I don't know. The World's Fair, they need to bring the World's Fair back. It's such a cool thing. Like we do the Olympics, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's for you know, sports. But why isn't there a World's Fair that people, anyone can go to? And it's like Comic-Con on acid. You know what I mean? It's so much bigger. It's like every nation is involved. And you're coming. You're bringing this stuff. And the organization. I mean, it's just such a no-brainer.
I think the reason...
It's my Uber.
I think the reason that... By the way, it'd be really funny to see, like, David Arquette buys World's Fair. Yeah. Like, then you just have your own World's Fair. But I think the problem is that... when the World's Fair was a thriving enterprise, I think it's when people just had no way of being exposed to anything more than what their local community was. And now it's people are just like, I'll just pull my iPhone.
You know? But if you could go to the World's Fair and
you can
sit right there and then look at the hover car.
I agree with you, but I think maybe that's what part of the cultural problem is that people are just like, I don't know, I can just look that up.
Well, if anything, for cities to have new monuments, you know, the Space Needle, and the fucking Ark.
Exactly. And, I still am upset that they never rebuilt the Twin Towers, like anywhere. I would like go to like the middle of some some state that needs a little more tourism, and in the middle of like nowhere, just build the Twin Towers. Just like, pow. You know what I mean? Like it would be so dope. Don't you think people would go there?
I think they would.
Yeah.
To Des Moines?
Yeah.
I mean, Des Moines needs it.
I don't know. That's or even it if it was like, you know, like structured like the Eiffel Tower, but like kind of, you know, with glass, so it's kind of see-through, but it's huge.
Las Vegas.
No, I guess
a constant World's Fair.
Yeah. I just think it just irks me that they. I would just have built the same thing like a little bigger and badder. You know what I mean? Like, I got it, the Freedom Tower. It's cool. It's beautiful. But come on. Where's the skyline? Where's the Twin Towers? Bring them back.
Yeah.
They can't stop us. We just come back stronger.
It's time.
I don't know.
Well, we're in an hour, which always makes me sound like a therapist. We're at an hour, David. We've explored a lot of themes today.
That's
and
right.
Hopefully, you know, for next time, though, I really want you to work on, like, let's see if we can really start to explore this burlesque puppet theater idea.
Absolutely.
You know, because, you know, manifesting ideas in the real world, that's where true joy comes from.
Thank you.
No problem. But it's good to see you. And, do you want to plug everything that you...
Yeah, The Field of Lost Shoes is coming out. It's a Civil War film. That's really I'm proud of. It's a really great movie, and then Celebrity Name Game and Cleaners on Crackle.
The Lost Shoes movie is basically like a bunch of kids going like being sent off to Civil War. Right?
Yeah, it's these kids that were at the Virginia Military Institute, and it's centered around the Battle of New Market, which was toward the end of the Civil War, but it's when the South sort of stood up to the North and won this specific battle, which was really important. But they pulled kids out of the Virginia Military Institute, and they were like 14 to 17, and they never were even prepared for war, and they just sort of like showed extreme courage, and because of them, they won this battle. And I'm the one that blows them all away. I'm Captain DuPont, who's like, fire!
Well, I mean...
Destroy them all.
Listen, in a way, it's... kind of good the South didn't win. I mean,
it is. It's true.
Sort of did a good job. I mean,
it's true.
You know, if I'm kind of looking at the way things played out, it kind of worked out okay.
I know.
So
I know. It's interesting because the kids, like the South, are the they're the heroes in this film essentially. Those little pricks. So I had no problem blowing them away. But with all due respect, at the Virginia Military Institute, they still every year. Have a march and sort of reenact that. And my grandfather, Cliff Arquette, who was a character named Charlie Weaver, had a Civil War museum in Gettysburg for several years.
Oh, wow.
Just to add to the craziness. And at one point in time, this is a true story, so I've heard, but they were going to build condos on like a portion of Gettysburg battlefield.
Oh, wow.
And he, like, threw up. He was up in arms. He couldn't believe it. And he held petition and got everyone together to make sure it was declared a historical landmark.
Oh, yeah. That's really cool.
It's surprising that it wasn't.
Yeah. I know. It was like...
You didn't make this historical landmark? I thought you were doing that.
Yeah.
You said you were going to do the historical landmark thing.
But look, those condos are beautiful.
I mean, they're really nice, guys.
Rates are...
Well, thank you, guys.
Yeah, man. It's good to see you.
You too.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
That's how you end.
We end with a joy burrito.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
I feel like I was blindsided.
Because it's a competition show.
From the producers of Jury Duty and The Bachelor.
We have scoured the earth for the 14 greatest reality contestants that were available during our production window.
Comes a reality competition show about reality competition shows.
Nobody has dared to find out who is the actual best at just being on a reality show. I'm your host, comedian Daniel Tosh.
Is win or go home.
Each episode, our contestants will face new challenges that will test their strength and lack of life skills for a chance to win $200
million.
$200,000.
Prepare, because it's about to be ugly, crying, lots of fighting.
Tayshia, I have to defend myself.
Celebrating 25 years of reality TV with your favorites.
I have diarrhea. You cannot do this to me.
What in gay hell have I got myself into?
The GOAT. Stream free on Amazon Freevee or Prime Video.